So on the topic of EDI, we've said like the benefits, but you know, what happens when we get it wrong? When businesses don't have, you know, prioritizer.
I always say there's like probably three categories of businesses out there. There are the, and there are, if we're talking about law firms, there can be any organisations, but I'm saying there's a certain number now of city firms, big city firms, and regional firms who are getting it right, you know, who are like progressing the agenda and are, we're seeing anti-racism practice at all levels. That's very small. The other end of the spectrum are where organisations are not initiated in any way in progressing the anti-racist agenda. And then you've got the in the middle. And most, I think most firms are in that, in the middle of the spectrum. Some get it right, some don't.
What's in the middle look like?
So in the middle looks like, it's like a, you know, a firm that may say have a number of, you know, bit of training in, but the actual diversity isn't there, or there's no one at a particular level of leadership, you know, or you've only got a small number. So they're kind of like, I think, the majority of firms out there. My issue is they shouldn't get it wrong, but if they do get it wrong, don't be defensive, learn from it, learn from and take support from third party sectors or organizations and so on who can come in and work with you, and work with you on it. And I think a lot of firms will kind of see anti-racism as this like kind of almost like, you know, something that they shut down on, or they kind of like detach themselves from, or they say it's a political issue and blah blah blah. And my view is actually this is the time to be learning, you know, and being open to getting it wrong. But having that transparency in the firm, you know what I mean? And I think there's a lot of firms that aren't taking that accountability. And, you know, historically, law firms are run by white, middle-aged, middle-class men. And it's, to a large extent, that is still the case. And most of them will not want to yield power, you know, or are averse to change. Certainly to distributing power to black ethnic minority people or women, you know. So there's a shift. This is a great firm. You know, you can see what's news run by Jessica and Paul, you know. And it's a good feel here, isn't it? You know, but that a lot of firms aren't there yet. You know,
sad
that
it's such a rare
find.
You know, considering, and I think it goes back to the idea that, you know, there's a thought that keeps going in my head that it's almost as if, you know, corporatism is, you know, the opposite of humanity. It's almost like, you know, the common thing that we've had throughout these conversations is that, you know, to be successful, to do this, to do that, you almost have to strip yourself of humanity. And I think a lot of firms have operated on that stuff for so long.
You
leave yourself at the door, especially if it makes you different from whoever's making decisions, whoever's, you know, making the profits. And what a lot of people, law firms haven't realized is because of the cultural change and shift that you were talking about, it's the opposite's going to become what gets you where you need to be. It's like Victoria's Secret. They spent so long on this model of operation of exclusion. And they were so adamant it was working. And all of a sudden, you know, they forgot to look outside and forgot to look at what was happening outside. And then while outside was, you know, packing up all those ideas of let's exclude for profit and let's include for profit. And it's just such a shame that so many of these people who, as you said, a lot of them people who have held wealth for many generations, but aren't, what's the most polite way of saying this, don't seem to be switched on enough to realize that the new way of making, and obviously it shouldn't be the basis of it that it's to make money, but even if you want to understand it in your arena, if you want to bring it into your, you know, way of understanding, then why would you not look at those statistics of, you know, of profit increase when you have diversity? It, as you said, a lot of it is down to ego, and when the people who run these places, their ego informs a lot of of the culture, and in turn, they just shoot themselves in the foot.
They do,
you know, that's, so that's,
and they have to be careful now, more so, but, you know, because as I say, you know, a lot of, more than ever before, organisations are open to scrutiny. You know, is it Generation Z? I'm not what Generation Z is. It's Generation Alpha now, isn't it? Mm. But Generation Z is the Z.
Yeah.
That shows how old I am. Jeez. I was saying mem instead of, is it meme? Is it mem? So my daughter's like, just like. But, you know, they are more in tune with. Yeah. Diversity, multiculturalism, challenging discrimination. So, so you've got to move with that. You've got to move with that time because you will lose the talent. Mm-hmm. The talent won't come to you.
Yeah,
you know. And they expect and will demand it more and more. And clients will demand it more and more. Massive corporate clients, the likes of, you know, NatWest, Coca-Cola, all the they look now to see what you have, you know, your diverse composition within your firm, because they expect to see that. And, you know, it's a lot of firms work in global markets. So, you know, they're going to have to move with the time.
Yeah.
As a profession, we have seen a state that has doubled in over 10 years, you know, more so to the population, which is commendable to an extent. From when I was, you know, practicing, that there has been a jump. But only to a certain level. And for the likes of yourself, you need to see black leaders, black, you know, partners in that position, because then you know that it's that if you can see
model
it,
your steps.
You can be it, you know. And that is across all areas.
I also think that you need to see the leaders, but you don't need to see the leaders that have assimilated.
Absolutely.
I think because we talk about representation, don't we, a lot. But, you know, if you look at the government, for example, in terms of representation, you can mention that for a second. Some of the harshest policies are enacted by and led by people of colour within certain governments. So I think we need to be really open and honest what we mean about representation, about people that are still sort of got the benefits and sort of the best interests at heart of the communities that they originating from. I think, just going back to what you were saying before about, you know, what does it look like when we get it wrong? I think we see that quite often. But what I see is for the middle organisations or the organisations that are getting it wrong is that they've got no strategy. So it's like, we'll do a bit of training and that'll just solve everything. With me, training is maybe midway in a holistic approach to anti-racism. There's lots of different levels to how we go about this, and doing a bit of training is not going to unpick years and years of sort of, you know, racist, oppressive practice. We need to sort of look at it a little bit deeply. And I go on about strategy all the time. Everyone gets bored about it, because I think for us to really have an understanding of how we are going to get from A to B, we need to be really clear on the vision, you know, the aims, the objectives, the actual resources that need to go into making that happen. What I see with some organisations is they go, yeah, we want to do all of this amazing stuff, but it's just not going to happen in the first 12 months, so it's not a win for us. But actually, a commitment to anti-racism is a lifelong commitment, it's something that needs to be embedded into every facet of your organisation, whether it be marketing, whether it be the you know, product department, whether it be sort of forward facing department or any delivery, there needs to be an understanding from everyone, and it's all about bringing people along with us. I think a lot of organizations sometimes see this anti-racism agenda as something that's done to them, but it actually should be something done in partnership with them, the clients and their staff. It's something that, and sometimes when we talk about this, it can seem like such a big thing, but actually, when you start embedding anti-racism practice into everything that you do, and it's on a strategic level that has, you know, deliverables, key performance indicators in the same way that you would do for any sort of project, then you will see change happening. It needs to be long-term. You can't do everything in a year. Look at a plan for three. Look at a plan for five. Look at what you can do in the long term. You're not going to, you know, if you've got a workforce of 90% men, you're not going to go and have 50% women by, you know, the next 6 months.
But you will set yourself a target. Exactly. And you should set targets as to, you know, in 3 years' time, there's going to be a percentage of, you know, representation at particular levels, you know, and work towards that. Because if you don't set, if you don't set and then monitor these targets, nothing gets done, you know.
You need to be held accountable.
You've got to be held. And we've got to, you've got to be transparent with that as well. You know, I know someone who, is a black lawyer in a very large firm. Mm. He's the Strands diversity lead for the firm. Mm. And he's associate level, which is the level that I was. And, you know, he has had conversations, and we're talking about a firm which has got 200 salary partners and 35 equity partners. Yes, it's a big firm. And, you know, he was given that space to talk to them. And it was a virtual call, and he was talking about, you know, progressing the anti-racist agenda. And it's kind of like, well, I'm looking back, I'm looking at you all here, you know, 35 owners of this business. Mm-hmm. Not one, you know, no one looks, not one of you looks like me, all white male, predominantly male, and white female. You know, so how am I to get there? And also it's kind of like, what he's basically said was, it's not, you know, you are to come really to me to make these changes. It shouldn't be for me to come to you.
Yeah.
And it was a really, really good point, you know, and he's an excellent lawyer. But my concern is it's going to get to a point where he'll just, like a
burn
just go. Yeah. He'll just go somewhere else and move sideways, or, you know, and that is the reality, you know, in a number of these firms, but some are getting it right. Some are.
I think as well, sometimes people will hire a diversity lead and then they're responsible for diversity.
No,
that's not how it works. It needs to be done. A collective. And I think I was having conversations last year with a number of diversity leads who were doing this type of role in different organisations, and the strain that they're under to carry that for a whole organisation. And, you know, usually on their own to do that. And the understanding that just hiring someone to do that role is not...
No.
Your not problem really. Solved. Yeah. It's the beginning of a journey. Yeah, exactly. And, I always see that, like, anti-racism is a marathon, not a sprint. It's a tired, cliche way of saying things, but it's actually true. Yeah. There's a commitment to this in the long term. You know, if we're looking at the history of Liverpool, that's hundreds and hundreds of years of oppression, of, you know, which slavery contributed to, which so many different things contributed to. That's not going to be undone, societally on that level, or locally, you know, with a few trainings or a few... It's about us actually making that commitment to the long term, understanding from, if we're going to look at it from a finance or a corporate angle, looking at all of the things that make that choice to sort of invest really positive, but also just thinking about it from a humanity perspective, about making the environments better for everyone who works there, because it isn't just black people that benefit from this organisation being more diverse or being more anti-racist. It's everyone. And I think sometimes having a shift in that perspective to allow organisations to understand that it's the benefit of everyone that we have equality, equity, diversity and inclusion.
And really, you know, how authentic of an organisation are you in regards to EDI? You know, do you live and breathe it? Because then is that a true priority, or is it, you know, Is it not? Yeah, exactly. Is it a side project? And, you know, basically, I'm not interested if it's a firm that will, you know, want to do tick so many boxes by doing some certain amount of training or blah, 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 so that they can kind of improve their ratings on, say, Times Best Law Firm list or some diversity league. I'm not interested.
No.
And, you know, and black staff see through that as well. So the messages have to come most definitely from the top, from the leaders, not from the diversity group. You know, it has to come from the leaders of the organisation, and it has to, I won't use that word, trickle down without it. But, you know, it does have to cascade, let's use that word, down, so that the whole culture of the organisation knows where your leaders are at, whether or not it's a true priority of the organisation.
Yeah.
Because I think where a lot of firms and a lot of places as well, you know, obviously we pointed out that a lot of these spaces, the power is held by a certain demographic. And I think sometimes some of those members of those demographic, they genuinely do want to change, but they don't know how. And I think what you said there was really excellent point, because then it just, you know, the point there is, even if you don't feel like you can be everything for that black worker or for that worker of colour, what you can do is have, you know, a behaviour that worker and other people can model themselves over. If you appreciate and advocate for for an inclusive space to be created, then you don't need to be well-versed in, you know, the unique social identity of every single person at the firm. But I think that's what a lot of it's overwhelmed for a lot of these leaders. You know, sometimes it's, oh, so now I have to think about, you know, trans issues, and now I have to think about black issues. And they're just like, you know what, I'm not going to bother with all that. And I think sometimes the answer is so simple. Just creating that space. That and that in itself is a behavior that can be modeled after. Because then that person, you know, for example, in this sort of space, we are then able to hold the door open for other people. And it creates that change without you at the top having to do much work.
You don't have to devote. Campaigns, you know, that's so that, you know, you are allowed to have that space where they can listen
you don't
to
have to
your voices if you know what I mean.
There's also organisations like the Anthony Walker Foundation for a shameless plug that are experts in this type of work. So it's just about having them conversations, because firms aren't expected to do all these things on their own. They're not experts unless they've studied in that particular area. We've got access to so many different consultants who are experts within their field. We've got, you know, access to a lot of the training, a lot of the strategy, a lot of that information. So organisations can call a consultant in for really small fees in terms of, you know, on an advisory level. If it was just to have someone come in and have them conversations with, that is the sort of work that we can do at the foundation. And, you know, there are other organisations that do that. So for me, it isn't always about the firms having to take on everything. And then there's also going back to strategy. If they do feel overwhelmed by it, what the best way, and this is from a personal level, how I stop feeling overwhelmed was I plan. Yeah, if I'm overwhelmed because of work or because of something that's going on in my life, I sit down and think to myself, okay, what do I have to do to get from A to B? And how can I break that down into achievable, you know, the SMART targets, for example, making sure it's relevant, making sure it's time limited. How do we do this in a way that we can do at this point? And for one firm, they might go, we can do this in 3 years. And for another firm, they might go, this is a 10-year strategy. Well, for our perspective, it's about working towards something rather than saying, this isn't anything to do with us. We're just here to do this, that, and the other. We're actually the well-being and duty of care to staff. Because I do think this is a duty of care issue, especially myself going through and experiencing what it is like to be a black woman in an organisation that no one really looks like me. It becomes an issue of making sure the well-being of your staff is looked after. So, and then also there's a law. Everyone forgets about that.
I really love that point that you just made about, you know, a duty of care, because I think when you speak to so many black professionals, not just in the legal industry, but literally every single, it's like when we went to that anti-racism conference, and there was so much commonality in the stories across sectors, across gender, across age, and the commonality was black people, you know, burning out, black people
tired,
you know, going moving vertically rather than
sideways
rather than upwards. And so for me, it's then I feel like across the country, all these organisations have failed in a in a duty of care, because, you know, if it was things such as, if it was a physical thing, you know, if we were considering, oh, well, someone at work has left that ladder, and all these people were reporting the fact that they kept slipping on that same ladder or puddle or whatever it was, there'd be a case to answer for. But when black people are reporting that we're being burnt out, this is happening to us, where's the case to answer for?
Where's the intervention?
Where's the intervention? And where's the, why is the penny not dropping that? There's there's a real issue here. If, you know, it's not like we get together in a room and go, okay, so this is what we're going to say about this. Is, let's get our story together. You know, you go to conferences, you come to things like this. It's the same story being told by a different person. And that to me is just something that I just think is not even really touched on. You know, obviously we are talking about it.
You know, as I said, you're so right. Because when you're talking about, like, kind of, I was talking about, you know, there has been an increase in employment and recruitment. You know, when you compare it, I think it's about 17 or 18% of them, but when you compare, I think Asian people are like five times as much as black people who have, you know, in the profession and have progressed. You know, that, you know, I always say, you know, we all say there's no homogeny when it comes to racism. So, you know, there's certainly most definitely are black people are really poorly served in the legal professions, less than 1% of black partners in city law firms. You know, I think it's 90 out of 13,000, you know, partners. You know, so this is a real
serious issue. I think you made a good point before with the fact that, like, it doesn't always need to be this big, overwhelming work. It can just be about creating that inclusive culture. So, for example, at CEL, we're allowed to write blogs about particular things. So, like, we celebrated Diwali, or we did our presentation on Black History Month, and we kind of open up these conversations. And then for recruitment purposes, you know, when people are looking and they're applying, they're seeing, oh, this is taking place, so I feel safe to enter the space. That was my experience.
Yeah, that was for both of those.
Exactly. This is what you're doing, which is brilliant. And it's great that the firm is doing it, because your exposure's there and you will draw in.
Yeah.
You know, from a much more, a wider diverse talent pool, because people will see, you know, that practices, you know, anti-racist practices are being made within your practice, you know. And it was good that you, because this same guy wanted Black History Month in this law firm, but all offices, there's many in the country, to have a Black Food Day, you know, where people brought in African food, you know, and it was like, you know, it was meant for every office to do that. And he then was so disappointed. Certain office in Newcastle all ordered pizzas. Oh. Another office ordered Chinese food, you know, and he brought this to the attention of someone who I know, who's more senior, who was disgusted by it and was saying, you know, what is the situation here? And as he said, you know, there was an Asian week or whatever, and it was all the Asian food was there, Indian food, you know, it wasn't. Yeah. So it's kind of like it diluted every time, you know, and it's kind of like, what message is that sending? Because it should be clear from the top of the organisation that this is what we're doing, and there's no kind of dispensation or kind of altering of the
bunching everything together as the same issue. And I think that's something that's that does actually really not wind me up, but I think a lot of it stems, you know, for example, I'm not sure what your experiences are, but I think if you are, you know, a Black person who's passionate about anti-racism, you will at some point have reached that point of what about racism, of, you know, well, you're talking about Black issues, what about this issue?
Yeah.
And I think people always forget that, one, Blackness is the complete opposite to whiteness.
Mm.
And when whiteness, regardless, you know, whiteness, when you look across the spectrum, is held at the top, it will be inevitable that at the bottom will be Blackness.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it sometimes is very exhausting, because then you always have that what's in between brought to us, you know, when all we're trying to do is advocate for ourselves.
Yeah.
And the thing is, we do tend, I believe, to be quite inclusive and try to be inclusive in our, but at the end of the day, it's not, in a very polite way, it's not our work, you know. And I think sometimes we're doing, you know, a lot of movement that have been carried out due to Black anger. It's that what about ism as you said, of, okay, well, we're talking about this, but let's put it together with this. And what people don't realize is that a lot of the, you know, people do enjoy the fruits of our labor in terms of, you know, when we have spoken up about certain conversations, you can see the ripple effect. When we started talking about George Floyd, there was so many conversations stemming from that on you know, not just anti-Blackness, but, you know, hate against the Asian community. You know, and so I do think that to me, it does dilute, and it's counterproductive, not just for us, but also for the people, other people, because they deserve to have a separate conversation.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
Because,
that is...
know, there's a time for community and collaboration and, you know, to hold hands together, and there's a time to name very unique experiences.
Think as well, it's quite reflective of the way sort of society sees racism, because a lot of the stuff that we do with the foundation is, I mentioned definitions earlier, but a lot of people don't really understand what racism is. I would believe so. Definitely. The way we discuss racism within the foundation is we talk about like the different levels. People will often understand what individual racism means, which is, you know, between two individuals, but they don't really understand institutional racism, maybe a little bit more, especially with the recent stuff that's come out at the moment. Or systemic racism, they can't really get their heads around what these three things mean. So sometimes when you're having a conversation with someone about racism, they're talking about the fact that the N word isn't used, you know, as prolifically as it once was. So they'll talk about that, but they don't really understand what we mean by institutions when we're talking about the sort of there's things that are in place within an organisation that means that if you've got a black sounds in name, then you will not you can get through the door in recruitment. Yeah. And then they don't understand systemic racism, which is a lot to do with, you know, equity, but to do with oppressive practices, to do with how that is filtered into the world to make people see black people as inferior.
Yeah.
So then that flavours everyone's view. And that means that laws, policies, things that are enacted, which make black people's lives harder because of the historical legacy of racism and slavery within this country. So when you have these conversations, a lot of the time we're not talking about the same thing, and it does become very exhausting. So you think you're repeating the same thing over and over again, and you're getting fed up of it and stuff. So I think for me, one of the things that we see as a really good tool at the Anti-Walker Foundation is looking at, you know, historical things that happened in this country around racism. We'll talk about stuff like, you know, the Bristol bus boycott, the Mangrove Nine, Oliver Morris, things like this that allow people to have an understanding of the pinnacle moments in race relations in this country, which had a massive impact on sort of the way we live our lives and the things that we experience. Yeah. And we use sort of that tool within education to allow people to sort of plant seeds to think a little bit more broadly around what racism actually means and the legacy of colonialism and racism within this country and how that enacts on black people's lives to this day.
Definitely.
So it is a tool that we use, you know, that we think is a good one.
I, in a nutshell, Robert, I do think, you know, if you go into a firm and it is predominantly white, or you've got black people who have been and gone within whatever period of time, but, you know, the attrition rate of black people leaving is high, you have got, your firm is systemically racist. As far as I'm concerned, because it shouldn't be, that shouldn't be the situation anymore. And unless, you know, if you are not being actively inclusive in bringing people in and retaining and promoting those people, what you're actually being is actively exclusive.
Yeah.
And that's basically what firms need to just self-reflect, look at their cohorts, look at the demographic of their organisation. How representative is it? Hold the mirror up, learn from it, you know, don't be defensive, just work towards it. You know, we're talking about this journey of anti-racism. Okay, get your strategies in place to improve it. You've failed, historically you've failed, but okay, we're at an era now where things are moving, hopefully in the right direction. More of this has happened. None of us here will deny that a lot more of this has happened since 2020. Since the events of 2020 and George Floyd's murder and the support of the Black Lives Matter movement, we've really seen a marked increase in organisations who want to work with us. You know, it's a hateful thing that's happened, but something positive has come from that, which is exactly what the foundation is about. And we will work with people, genuinely will work if they want to progress their agenda. But it's self-reflection personally on yourself and how your biases are the same, you know, what language that people use, like you're talking about, you walking through and you would get comments like that, and organisationally as well, looking at how it looks.
Yeah, I think it's good as well that we're having these types of conversations and that they're more at the forefront, because businesses aren't safe anymore being passive. They're expected to do something.
No, they're a game changer, I suppose, has been a lot more of these diversity leagues that, you know, certainly the Black Solicitors Network has pushed for, you know, in the last 25 years it's been running, you know, that was never, so on what gets measured gets done.
What advice would you give to organisations or individuals who are trying to prioritise EDI or anti-racism work and to just keep the momentum going and make sure that it's authentic?
I would first and foremost say it has to come from leaders. So, you know, they have to cascade that message. There has to be transparency and accountability. There needs to be structures in place, planning as to how they will move that agenda along. They need to improve representation, the right type of representation within the organisation. They need to continue to invest in the appropriate training, leadership inclusivity training as well. You know, really important, as well as racial literacy training for staff in microaggressions, conscious bias, so on, to really promote authentic, active allyship in leadership.
Yeah,
you know, where people are not just acknowledged by leaders, but are in fact endorsed by them so that they then can progress.
Yeah.
We need to see people in those spaces. Those seats are, there aren't enough of us at a seat at those tables yet.
Mm.
So we still do need, even though it's hard for me to say that, because it's like it unfairs gatekeeping, but that is the case. We need white leaders to make this space available and to endorse black people into those spaces.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah, I think just like to add to that, really, for me, it is about strategy. It's about anti-racist strategy. It's about consultation with your staff, your stakeholders, as well as your employees and your senior level people, so that you get their voices in this and bring them along for the ride.
Mm.
I would also say a business case, because with anything, if you're going to change anything within an organisation, you need to know how much it's going to cost, how much it's going to take in terms of resources. So look at it like you would any other business venture, put a business case forward and actually explore the avenues and look at the research behind it as well, and add that within a strategy that's got, you know, your smart outcomes, it's got your time linked to it, and is measurable and monitored, and make sure that it doesn't fall on one person's head, that it is a collective and holistic approach to anti-racism. You know, just finish it off by saying again, it's a marathon, not a sprint, and there needs to be investment at every level, and it doesn't always have to be, you know, connected to the Queen's. A lot of it does, but some of it doesn't as well. It could be connected to the time and the space that's being carved out, for it to be authentic. And for us, if we really want to make a change, got to do things differently. And while if the stakes are very high with this type of work, it's the sort of your staff that and your other members and your employees and people who come to use your service in whatever way. So we can't really afford to, you know, half do things. It needs to be done properly. And then it needs to be unapologetic in that, but also done in a way that brings people along for the ride.
Yeah, absolutely. Katharina, Natalie, thanks so much for joining us. Obviously, such an important conversation. We've taken so much. Obviously, we're involved in our diversity committee. And I think we'll just take a lot from this in terms of what we can do in the firm and outside of the firm. So thank you so much.
Pleasure. Thank you so much for having us. It's really important conversations that we've had. So inviting us here is great. And we'll continue to help you and work with you. You know, reach out to us, network.
Yeah.
Let's do more of it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.